Good morning, Valila. Yes, it's another Monday morning in Helsinki. This is the How Bad Was That podcast with Ali and James, and you have with you today, James. That's right. You get a choice. You only get one of us from now on. We just sit in the chair and we leave notes for each other. Ali, I hope you're here next week. Please pick up the milk, etc. Yeah, Ali was on vacation. He was on vacay in Portugal or something like that. Some nice warm place where food is excellent. And he explained it to me today. There's something involving Remonte and something involving the kids having to be with Ali and then something about Moomins. To be honest, I took in the information, and then I think my brain decided that the details were not that important, so I kind of tossed them immediately. So, hello to Ollie and the kids, wherever you are, having fun. And hello to you who are not Ollie. Hello, everybody out there. I hope you're well, too. How you doing? How's your remonte? How's your summer? You have any good one? You had a sunburn yet? Have you ever gone swimming in the sea this year so far? Have you had a sauna? Do you remember the tallest man you've ever met? All right, this is How Bad Was That? And why don't we just kick this off?
How bad was that? Whee!
All right, that was the voice of Ali announcing Weehoo. It is the 15th day of July 2019 here in Helsinki. And one thing we do on this podcast, I forgot to do something about it also last week, which I'm going to rectify this time, which is going through this day in Finnish history, and something we like to start with now are the name days, which I still don't quite understand. I mean, I've lived here for a long time. I would get like a name day card from my grandmother on my name day when it happened when I was a kid, but I've still, as a North American, the idea that like you have a birthday and then you have a name day, and your name day is just the day for everybody named the same as you, and I don't... It's supposed to involve cake, I think. I don't know. But anyway, we have name days. And in the Finnish calendar, today is Rauni and Rauna. So happy name day. Happy cake day to you. Suomen Ruotsalainen in the Finnish-Swedish calendar. We have Ragnhild, Ragni, Ragna. I'm not sure if I'm going to pronounce any of these correctly. And it's going to get even more difficult as it goes down here. From the Orthodox calendar, we have Kerkko, Jutta, and Vladimir. Which is, that's a great trinity right there. Kerkko, Jutta, Vladimir. Congratulations. In the Sami calendar, we have Ravdna. And I'm not sure if I'm pronouncing that correctly either. And in the old school calendar, we have Bonavant, Elias, Jubileus, Kotko, Prudentius, and Theodora. Amazing. I love the... These are the best name. We should just have a few years where nobody can be named anything other than that. And we also go through, you know, what happened today in history and in Finnish history. There, to be honest, in Finnish history, there hasn't been one heck of a lot going on, except it seems to be the one thing I could find in the Finnish Wikipedia. Because I have to read it and translate it and not be actually sure what it says. But it appears to be that in 1640, the first university in Finland, and this would be the Turku Academy, the Turun Akademia, said vihkiäiset, which I'm not sure if that means founding or if that means like they had cake one day, or maybe, you know, they published something amazing, or maybe it burned down. With Turku, you can never really tell what the news actually is going to be. In the not specifically Finnish-speaking world, this was a crazy day going on. Oh, goodness gracious. We had lots of really unusual people being born. We'll get to those later. In 1799 today, the Rosetta Stone was found in the Egyptian village of Rosetta by French Captain Pierre-François Bouchard during Napoleon's Egyptian campaign. And by found, they mean discovered by white people, I suppose, and taken somewhere else out of its original context. Which, of course, given that they were, you know, bombing the place of the original contact and pretty much destroying everything, maybe it's okay that somebody moved it for safekeeping, but you know, you have to give that stuff back after a while. I think I went to the I was fascinated by the Rosetta Stone when I was in high school. I just thought it was like the coolest sort of document ever, this big stone. I went to the British Museum once, and the British Museum was so big that I remember, I think I was looking around at like an entire floor of sarcophagi, these Egyptian and also Coptic, like the Christian sarcophaguses as well, which those are a trip. Those are amazing. And then I missed the Rosetta Stone completely. Like, it's there, or a facsimile of it is there, and I just missed it because the British Museum is too fucking big because the Brits stole too much fucking stuff. Like, also, you know, when you go and see the Egyptian sarcophagi in the British Museum, like, it's really, literally, it's an entire floor of just coffins, decorated coffins, that are 100% not British. And you kind of get this sense of like, okay, I understand that there's like this sense of, showing people things, of educating people, of being able to study things. You want to have like multiple examples of a thing so you can talk about the differences and the subtleties and the different, you know, but at some point it's also like, do you need all of these? Like, could somewhere else have some of them too? I don't know. Just saying. Ooh. In 1815, Napoleon surrendered aboard the HMS Bellerophon. Goodness gracious. In 1834, the Spanish Inquisition is officially disbanded after nearly 356 years. I bet nobody was expecting that. And we have, in Canadian history, in 1870, we got Rupert's Land and the Northwestern Territory are transferred to Canada from the Hudson's Bay Company, and the province of Manitoba and Northwest Territories established from those vast territories. They are huge, by the way. Like, they are, Canada's big. If you haven't been, just, it's big. That's the best way to kind of describe it. I once took a train ride out to a workplace. I was working up in tree planting in North Ontario for a couple of summers, and I took a train out to get to where my workplace was, and it started in Toronto. It went up to North Ontario. The train ride was 30 hours long, and we were still in Ontario the whole time. And it was not a slow train. It was not, you know, turning around in little loops everywhere. It was going directly out of Ontario. And 30 hours later, we were still in Ontario. But yeah, that's kind of this is a part of like Canadian history I haven't been exposed to since I was a little kid. So I've kind of forgotten a lot of stuff, except that the Hudson's Bay Company, which still exists. I have some coffee mugs at home that are from the Hudson's Bay Company. It wasn't even the territory, like the Tory territory had to be transferred to Canada. A company owned this land. I mean, to begin with, you know, the whole concept of the ownership of the land, of course, being, a Western convenience, a pretty shitty thing to do, to everybody who lived there already. But yeah, the idea that, like, you know, this entire chunk of land was seen as like uninhabited enough and uncivilized enough that they, you know, a company would just like, we just own this. We just own all this land. It's ours. It belongs to no country. What else was there? There was a Japanese Communist Party established in Japan, 1922. I guess that went well. Steel strike in 1959. And there was something, there was a couple of really, Gianni Versace was murdered on this day in 1997. In 2003, AOL Time Warner disbands Netscape. That's a blast from the past. Does anybody here remember Netscape? I used to work for Netscape. In the year 2000, I was living in the UK and I was working, it was actually for an internet ISP called netscapeonline.co.uk. And so it was like, this was the company that you would buy your internet access from. We were an internet service provider. And we also created like the news sites and the content for the whole like main page. So when you would log on to your internet, you would by default get this netscapeonline.co.uk front page. I did all the HTML coding for that. We had, I think, 11 people in our company. There were 600,000 people who were subscribers. Our CEO was 25 years old. And we were working in the AOL building in the UK. It was just before the dot-com bubble burst, and those were weird days. Those days gave me a strange idea of what the future would actually hold for me. Did not quite work out that way. Also in 2006, you'll like this, Twitter is launched. I know. You know, what's... who could have predicted? Oh, God. Everything, like... Twitter is just literally the worst. On the other hand, if I didn't have Twitter, I wouldn't know what was going on in the world now, and I wouldn't be able to do this podcast with all these badly informed opinions that just kind of go down the pipeline. Also, Rembrandt was born today in 1606, so well done. Well done, Rembrandt. Well done, Rembrandt's mom, for making that whole thing happen. Let's get out of the history section because you can get bogged down here. I clearly could just get bogged down in here for the rest of my life and be perfectly happy with it. Boy. So, what's going on in the news today? What's going on in Helsinki? Some interesting stuff I thought that happened this week. Yesterday was International Non-Binary Day. I'm not sure if that means that the day itself was non-binary or that it was the day for, it was the name day for people who are non-binary. It was cake. I hope you had cake if you are not binary. Even if you are binary, have some cake. Try the non-binary cake. See if it changes your world. I don't know. Yeah, I think that's a really kind of, I'm really, in, how do I, like, every time I open my mouth about non-binariness, I end up getting in trouble in some way. So let's see if I can manage that this time. I find the non-binary, the whole non-binary project, and I know that it's not a project in the sense that like people get together and go like, oh, we're gonna make this thing happen in society. I know that it's actually it's a matter of a bunch of people with sort of similar needs and similar feelings and desires, trying to create a space in society that works for them, which I think is pretty boss. But the whole, just because the entire idea of a non-binary gender in like our context, in a Western context, is so different from everything else that it has come before it. It requires so much adjustment that I find it super, super interesting just on the basis of this, just on the basis that whatever it is that we're trying to do, that it's different enough, that it will really require changes in the way people think. I like that, yeah. I also, like myself, sure, I identify as non-binary, but I tend to do it in a really kind of quiet way because I don't see the, I don't know, it doesn't seem kind of right for me to take any space away from people who perhaps are more in are more invested in that as a label, or who kind of need that label to be a certain. I don't know. It really makes no sense to me. As a like, this is the problem. Like sort of ways of defining ourselves, when we get labels to define ourselves, it works really well for a while, because when you hear about something and you think, oh my goodness, I'm kind of like that, and then you look it up a little bit more and you go, oh, actually, I'm really like this, and then you see it again and you go, you know what, this has a big this offers like a really big explanation for a lot of the difficulties that I've had in the past in certain situations, and here's a bunch of people who can understand what, you know, what I was going through, and I can talk to them about it, and we can see ourselves as having like an experience that is legitimate in and of itself, as opposed to just like, oh, I was doing it wrong in normal society, whatever that means. But the problem with the label is that eventually, you know, a group that sort of subscribes to that label starts to just because of statistics, just because of numbers, they start to kind of define it a particular way. So there is actually kind of a way that people think non-binary people are. And even there is a way that even non-binary people think that non-binary people are. And we constantly have to remind ourselves. And if you're new to that term, by the way, it just means that your gender identity is somewhere different from mask or femme or male or female or man or woman. Some people say that theirs is in between. Some people say that theirs is outside of that. Some people say that theirs is neither of that. So there's lots of really like different ways to kind of go about even describing that part. But yeah, the problem with that is that with the label is that, you know, as human beings, we create the labels to try to make sense of our world. But then as soon as a label gets some kind of strength, it becomes a prescription. You know, so if you want to be X, then you have to do this and this and this and this, and that will make you X, whatever. And that's just like a way of thinking that kind of gets underneath our skin really, really easily. So there's this like idea that a person who is non-binary will express their gender in like an androgynous way, and that's not necessarily true. You can look very femme or very mask. You don't have to look non-binary, whatever that looks like, in order to be, you know, to identify that way. And you can look androgynous and not identify as non-binary. It's like, it's just supposed to be a tool. It's not supposed to be something we take that like incredibly seriously that it becomes like a life or death thing. But at the same time, it helps us, I think, you know, create better spaces in our society, and also to give room for our gender to have a different meaning to us than what we sort of automatically grow up with, if you know what I mean. I don't know. But anyway, happy non-binary day to all the non-binary people yesterday. I know. And you're probably listening to this like later in the week and you're like, wow, that was days ago, literally. I can't even. Yeah. And I just came back from Tallinn. That was fun. I was in a place called Heldeke, which used to be a brothel, which every single person who was in Heldeke told me that it used to be a brothel. They explained to me in lurid terms exactly how brothel-y this used to be. And now it's a place where they do burlesque and stand-up comedy and magic shows and other stuff. And it's really, really cool little space. It's absolutely great if you don't think about the suffering that might have happened in there. I guess every other building's got to be like that. I enjoyed being in... I like Tallinn. It's obviously, it's become like way more Western than it was before. It still retains that kind of look of Russianness that makes me very disoriented and feel very strange. But, you know, it's also in the last 10 years, like, it's got latte places popping up everywhere. And they have the scooters. They have their own brand of the scooters. So you can scoot around. They have about 7 of them. Every single time I tried to find a scooter, it would be like, it was kind of like being surrounded by a bunch of tourists, like a whole bunch of seagulls around a bit of Liha Piraka and the Kalpatore. And they were just, you know, everybody's kind of waiting for this one scooter. So Tallinn needs a few more of those. Also, the most Estonian thing happened. We were at a gig and somebody had said something like that and asked for, like, I think they'd asked the question of, like, how many hairs do you think is on a cat's back? And this guy in the audience with this very, engineering kind of maininki, he just kind of, I think he said something like 80,000, but then he started talking about the statistical deviance of it. I mean, this is an audience member. Like, we were heckled with statistics, which I was like, this is the most Estonian thing I've ever heard of. I think if there's one thing that, like, for me, Finland and Estonia seems to have really in common, it's that, you know, people appreciate a lot of silence there, and they appreciate a lot of statistics. That's how I imagine. I imagine, like, all the meetings for this Helsinki-Tallinn tunnel that are coming up, the reason why they can't get it done by 2024 is probably just because they're all in the room doing silence and statistics all the time. That's got to be what it is. I like going to these places and also kind of thinking about the sort of Russophobia that I've managed to pick up. I mean, I probably had it before I came anywhere near Finland because of, you know, growing up in the Cold War, during the Cold War. But, it's always, like, I think Finns are very humiliated by the Swedes and they're very afraid of the Russians and they just take it out on the Estonians. Like, it's not a really great look. You know, you come there, you go to the old town, you get incredibly drunk. You shout about how Estonia has no real culture, and then you throw up on your own shoes in front of the Depeche Mode bar. It's not a fantastic look, Finland. But yeah, it's weird, this kind of culturally bullying other nations just because they're sort of smaller, or you want to take it out on somebody. I think it's a bit odd. But I am also, I will admit, I'm kind of like, I get freaked out by Russian culture. There was like, I was in this little coffee shop, and there were these guys sitting over there, and they're speaking Russian, and they're dudes, and they're sort of, you know, checking me out in the Russian way. Like, I don't know, Russian people, they check you out differently. They sort of look at you directly as if they could own you if they wanted to, for instance. That's maybe just the feeling that I get. And I remember feeling very much like, oh my God, do I look gay? How gay do I look? Do I look super gay or just slightly gay? Should I wear my legs differently? Was what I was thinking. And then the guy got up, went to the counter, ordered something in English, had like a perfectly, you know, American sounding accent. Like he was clearly completely fluent in English and working in English all the time. And I was like, oh, no, he's all right. He's okay. And I was like, well, this is the dumbest thing ever. Like, I'm just getting these weird vibes of like, I'm assuming homophobia just because these guys are sitting there speaking Russian, looking Russian and looking tough to me at least. So I'm just reading into it something completely different. Anyway, that's weird. Go to Tallinn. Wonderful day trips you can get from here. Beautiful old town. Food really nice. People are really nice. You can just, you know, walk around and have a great time. I highly recommend. This week as well, what else is going on? We have all this. My Twitter is kind of full with people talking about representation and in acting and stuff like that. There's a whole bunch of people kind of upset because the new Little Mermaid is going to be black. And people are like, why can't, it's a Danish story, why can't the Little Mermaid, why can't Ariel be like white like she was, like, just, oh my God, get over it. Oh my, like, it's like the British Museum, okay? You have all those sarcophagi, you have all of them. You have all of them. Just let one be somewhere else. It doesn't actually affect The stroke doesn't affect you. It doesn't affect you at all. You get used to it in 30 seconds. Honestly. If you got any... If you have in yourself, okay, if you're white and you have in yourself and you see like, oh, the Little Mermaid is going to be black and you think, oh, well, that's not right. Just, you know, examine that. Examine just that moment. Really. Completely examine that moment. And just also dunk your head. Can't get over it. Oh, I think Scarlett Johansson was also, she did an interview, I think, for Variety, where she was talking about, there was a thing that went on a while back where she was going to be in this movie, and the character that she was going to be playing was, and I've forgotten his name, but it's a guy who was like in the mob. He was like in organized crime in the mid-20th century. A fat trans guy, so, you know, well before any of this, you know, and well before like transgender was like a kind of a thing that you could be in polite society in any way. And so she's like, she was going to play this role, and a whole bunch of trans Twitter went like, no, I don't think you should. And they actually kind of, they shelved the movie. Because of all the criticism. And, you know, then she's just recently back in this because she's given an interview where she's like, I'm an actor. I should be able to play any man or woman or child or tree or animal, etc. And it's like, yeah. I mean, I understand that acting is an art. I've been an actor for years myself. I understand that there's an art and there's a specific joy of being able to impersonate something that you are not, and the way that, like, the way that you get into that work and the way that you kind of take on another person's life and try to put it out there, that's really cool work and really fun. And a lot of good actors, you know, are a lot of, you know, really fantastic roles are these kinds of work. But I don't know. At the same time, I feel like it, you know, that's gotta cut both ways, right? So, like, my problem with that is like that. I do think that actors should be able to play anything, but I think the second problem you have to look at is that who's allowed to be an actor, and who's allowed to play anything, because, you know, it, like Ali, if Ali were an actor, and he could be an actor someday, who knows, he would not be able to play Marilyn Monroe. I mean, he could, but it would say something about the role of Marilyn Monroe. It wouldn't be just a sort of one-to-one representation of that person, of that historical figure. And so if Scarlett Johansson is going to go and play a trans man, then that means that, like, you know, a trans man should be able to play Scarlett Johansson, which I don't think is ever going to happen. You know, like when I was in acting, when I was in theater, like one of the reasons why I ended up drifting out of theater is because I wasn't able to be all of these things. I got cast when I was, like, so I was younger. I was like in my late teens through my 20s. And I always got cast in these roles that were like, either they were super butch, they were super butch lesbian, or they were men. I played male roles all the time. Or I would play like the tarty barmaid in some, like, in Goethe's Faust or something, and I would have like a corset and the whole like décolletage just bursting out of everywhere. But I was never going to play Juliet, and I knew I was never going to play Juliet, and everybody knew, like, nobody was ever going to cast me as like the cisgender femme straight romantic lead. There was just this idea that I wasn't right for that, or that I couldn't do that. And it's not like I, you know, if I had been It's not that I'm such a shitty actor that I couldn't take on something of that role. It was that people looked at me and said, no, Juliet should be a smaller, more feminine girl. And so, you know, these kinds of roles, these sort of Juliet roles, were not available to me whatsoever. And then you get something like that, a project like this, where that kind of role is specifically ideal, because it could be quite a faithful representation, at least on the terms of, you know, the gender. When it comes to, like, where they were from and, like, what they did for their job as a mob boss, then, no, that's, you know, everything is up in the air with that. But when it comes to the gender expression, there's a much higher chance of actually fitting the bill. And then, you know, Juliet gets to take that role again. Like, I'm just like, nah, bye, bitch, etc. So, yeah, have fun with that. Maybe Scarlett Johansson can play Ariel next time, and everybody else can be happy about that. What else is going on this days in Finland? What did I see? I saw some stuff on Yle that was kind of interesting. Maybe one more thing. Yle had a story about apparently the sex work industry in Finland has reached, I don't know, somehow, what did they say? Finnish sex trade tops 100 million euros, which, all right. And they were doing this in the English side. I don't know if they were doing it in the Finnish side so much. And the article itself was, it was very, I mean, in the English Wiley News, they're kind of, I mean, you don't get an awful lot of analysis, shall we say. At one point I thought, oh, I can start this podcast where I can do analysis of news. And then I realized, no, I can't read the news enough to analyze it properly in Finnish. So all I get is these kind of like hot takes by James on Finnish news. But they asked about, would criminalizing the buying of sex help combat trafficking in Finland? No, that's not a good idea. I just want to get into this like a tiny bit. And I have never done sex work myself, and I only know a few people who are sex work advocates or sex workers themselves, and all of the people I know who are sex workers or have done sex work, they are generally like middle-class white people as well, who were definitely, you know, they were not trafficked and they do not have, you know, certain other things to deal with. But having said that, so I don't know that much about this, but I do know that this idea, this the criminalizing the buying of sex, that's called so-called the Swedish model, which was introduced in Sweden about 20 years ago. And one, the proponents of the Swedish model who say, like, so it's not illegal to sell sex, but it's illegal to buy it. And what that does is it makes it less attractive to it makes it less lucrative and helps crack down on the trafficking and the pimping. And that's what they claim is the positive of it. However, that might seem like, if you're coming from a sort of like a middle class background like I did, like I would have thought, like, yeah, that's a no-brainer. Buying sex is bad. Prostitution is a bad thing. So let's just try and wipe it out. But if you actually listen to what sex workers say, they hate the Swedish model. They absolutely hate it. And it's not hard to see why. If your sex worker is in a perfectly legal position, but your customers have been criminalized, then your customers are taking steps to protect themselves, right? And they're asking you to put yourself in potentially more dangerous situations because they themselves are vulnerable, right? So if you make it illegal to be the customer, then the customer is going to have to be, you know, taking all kinds of risks. And this really, really makes it much less safe for the sex worker. Absolutely. And it's not like we're going to ever stop sex work. Sex work is work, okay? Like, people who's like, oh, it's so like you're selling your body. Like, what the hell do you think a construction worker is doing? What do you think somebody who works in the mines is doing? They are selling their body. You say, oh, yeah, but it's not sexual. Yeah, because you have hang-ups about sex. And you don't have hang-ups about using muscles. It's a physical job. It's an emotional job. People do emotional labor. A lot of times sex work is simply about being with somebody, sometimes just talking to somebody. And, you know, being the kind of emotional support, being an intimate support for them that they, at the moment in their lives, they can't get anywhere else. And that is, I think, very specialized work and, you know, not bad work to do at all. But we have this massive stigma, of course, around the whole sex work industry. But, you know, somebody who works down the mines, they are, you know, using their entire body in the service of that work. They are exposing themselves to danger in the service of that work. They are exposing themselves to disease in the service of that work. And all they're doing is just bringing stuff up from underneath and putting your cell phones. From underneath, that's where we are. They're in the underneath, getting the little things for your cell phones. Yeah, so, yeah, basically, sex work is work. And yeah, we should not... and also, legalizing, and I don't know the finer points of this, so I should not go off so much, but there's a difference. Apparently, there is a difference between legalizing and decriminalizing something, right? So if you decriminalize something, you make it... You just take the law... The law equation is kind of out of it. You can't... It's not illegal, right? But if you legalize it, then you also have to regulate it in particular ways, right? So decriminalization and legalization are not exactly the same process. And as far as I know, most sex workers are much more supportive of the idea of decriminalization rather than legalization, because also then the legal process all has to go, they have to be involved in the process of creating these rules, you know? But we don't listen to sex workers because they're sex workers. And you haven't, you know, I'm really tired of as well in stand-up comedy as well, like how often somebody who is you know, the butt of a joke is a prostitute or a whore, and like you can hear in these jokes how much the punchline depends on the sex worker not being a full human being. How much it depends on them being kind of like a punchline, really a punchline. And these jokes pass by the radar all the time. Really, they do. But yeah. So if you are a sex worker, happy cake day today as well. And the work that you do is real work, and good on you. There we go. You full support. And then... How good was that? How bad was that? Et cetera, et cetera. What have I got? I got any shows to plug? Have I got any plugs to show? I'm not showing you my plugs. I should think these things through when I'm doing... Actually, I'm going to be in Pori tonight. If you are in Pori, then hello. We're going to do a show at Pori Jazz. Pori Yachts. We're going to do a Pori Yachts show. And that's going to be up in that cafe that's on the river tonight. Acts for the rest of the week. It is July, so nobody wants to go and do anything fun. They just want to be out in the sun, so I have no gigs for the rest of the week. I'm back next week, though. I'm going to be in Porvo on the 23rd, and on the 26th and 27th of July, I'm going to be in semi-final. Jukka Lindström is coming back here, and he's going to be working on his solo show, and a few of us are going to, you know, open and do some stuff with him. So that's going to be a super, super fun show, 27th and 26th of July. It's semi-final. And I would tell you what Ollie's doing, but he did not leave me a note. So I can't say anything about him. I can't speak for Ollie Jahangiri, right? as much as I would like to. if I did speak for Ollie Jahangir, I think I would just like start insulting myself all the time. That's just what I would do, and I would take it like a champ, because that's the relationship that we have, you know. Yeah, oh, I'm gonna hear about this next week. And Ollie, I did listen to last week. I liked it. I thought it was really interesting. You know what? I'll give you a review later. Okay. Have a great week, everybody. And we'll see you next time. Bye-bye.
How bad was that? Whee!